The following is a 1250 WTMA special presentation.
This is WTMA Tiger Radio, where you're hearing things,
where you're hearing things.
This is John Quincy, welcoming you to another hour of the history of TMA.
On the 1st of September, 1939, at dawn, the Germans crossed into our territory.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Johnson's Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
On Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war.
How about you?
Oh, me? My name is Robert Hare of Gold, eyes of blue, and muscles like Errol Flynn Hope.
President Truman has just announced that Soviet Russia has the atomic bomb.
Don't touch that dial. Listen to...
Well, hi once again, neighbors. Jack Gale all set to go with Joe Leonard at the Honky Tonk Piano and the Firehouse 5 Plus 2, our special...
Stay tuned to WTMA!
Hear the latest on the hour about Hurricane Cleo from WTMA's Hurricane Watch.
This is Charlie Lindsay in Swaggertown. It's 5 p.m.
When TMA news ends, TMA music begins.
And remember that all players in the RC Name It and Claim It contest receive a coupon good for a 6-bottle carton of refreshing RC Cola.
WTMA. Tiger Radio.
Hear the hits that make Charleston swing. Of the Tiger, number one.
It's WTMA bonus sweepstakes time. Another chance for you to win with number one, WTMA.
Alrighty, our prize this hour is a stereo valued at $150. Our person is...
The mighty TMA operates on an assigned frequency with 1250 kilocycles with a power of 5,000 watts during the day and 1,000 watts at night.
How about that? Going up the country, it's done by the Cat Heat on WTMA Radio. This portion of the Booby Dash Radio Showground from WTMA is being recorded and going to be sent to our armed forces around the world.
Big deal.
All right, Sam, knock it off.
WTMA.
Supreme Girls this morning on the John Fenton Show. Something rather common these days. It's called Stone Love. Sober up, you'll forget about it. WTMA time, 7:15.
That's WTMA News and what's happening Friday, August 18th, 1972.
Music. Our middle name.
It's 9:36. Also to Marcel from 1961 in Blue Moon. Good evening on you. 81 degrees, partly clear in the port city, and the Keith Nichols program with $567 in the Don't See a Low Jackpot.
TMA, it's Steve Russell. It's 7:08, and a chance for you to win $10 and a lip load of laughs and smack your mouth. Yule time coming up soon.
Oh, all I know is la 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 means I love you. And no, no, no means
you keep your hands to yourself.
WTMA with Burlap.
1250 TMA at 7:53 Monday night, right here with the old Chad Bell Show. And it's nice to have you along. Going to give you a chance to win an album. Matt Kelly,
as far as I know, right now, it's CJ and Buzz.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Freeway Scuds. CJ and Buzz.
I got some bad news for that lady.
Yeah.
What? The United States Football League.
1250 TMA, always playing the best blend of music, old and new, and on the way in the next 20 minutes, we've got Paul Davis, also the Foundations, and Don Henley from TMA.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here we go with hour number two of the call-in portion of the Dan Moon Show.
Hi, welcome back. Glad you're with us. Rush Limbaugh and the Limbaugh Institute for Advanced Conservative Studies. We got a phone call about 20 minutes ago from our Charleston, South Carolina affiliate, WTMA, Madeline
welcome,
Kelly.
Welcome, welcome, my fellow Charlestonians, citizens of the Lowcountry, those who serve in uniform to protect the red, white, and blue, and those who serve in local uniform, sworn to protect the innocent citizens of the Lowcountry.
Thanks for tuning in to the Morning Buzz at News Talk 1250 WTMA.
The history of TMA.
There's been a lot of great programming on WTMA since the station signed on in June of 1939. From the old-time radio dramas, comedies, and variety shows to today's format of news and talk. And that includes nearly three decades as one of the leading top 40 music stations in the Southeast. This hour, we're going to continue to look back at the rich heritage of the Lowcountry's second oldest commercial radio station as we hear the story of WTMA in the 1960s. directly from the folks who worked here.
WTMA Type Radio.
George Wilson is the WTMA program director. He's credited with making WTMA a real top 40 radio station around 1960. And we had the pleasure of speaking to him about those important days in TMA's history.
We only had three guys when we started rock and roll TMA. I worked in the morning, and then Bill Walton,
okay.
He worked from 9 to noon and then afternoon drive, and Doug somebody, I can't remember his last name.
Doug Randall?
Yeah, Doug Randall. He wound up managing a station in town there. I don't remember what the call letters were.
Yeah, 1450 WQSN.
Yeah. When we started, it was just the three of us.
Now, what year did WTMA become top 40?
I really don't know. I think it was in the early 60s, but when I went there, I actually came back to Charleston to work at WHAN, where I had worked a long time ago. I started in radio at HAN.
1340.
Harry Weaver, I think, was his
name. Yeah, Harry Weaver, yes.
I had worked for Harry when I first started in the business, and then Jack Gale, who worked at TMA at that time, helped me get started. He did a lot of voices. I used some of his tapes for my audition and got a job from HAN at that time.
Are you from South Carolina?
No, I'm from New York, but I played baseball for the Charleston Rebels, if you know who they were, way back when. It was a farm team.
And so you ended up in Charleston, and after, I guess, your baseball career ended, you decided to get on the radio?
Exactly.
So you went to work for Harry Weaver at WHAN. That was before they changed call letters to WOKE.
Right. I went back to Charleston to work for Harry Weaver, and I got there. I was working in Denver. I was stationed in Denver, anyway. I was drinking a lot, and I wanted to take a rest. So I called Harry, and I said, I'll come back and work for you for 6 months. I was drinking a lot, and I wanted to stop that and get my life back in order. And the first week I was there, Harry told me that not only would I have to do the morning thing, but I'd have to come in on Saturday and work from sign on until noon and then come back again. I said, what? That's not why I came here. So I walked down the corner from the old HAN, and there was an Army-Navy store there, two brothers, Abe and Joe Dumas, at an Army-Navy store. I used to know them well. And so what are you going to do? I said, well, I came back to rest and get myself in shape. And so they said, well, come on, we know this guy Chuck Smith real good at WTMA. I think there were six stations in town at that time, and TMA was last with the Ape in Jacksonville beating them.
Wow.
They were having a tough time. So anyway, they took me over to Chuck Smith, and they said, George is a well-known radio guy now, and he said, well, what can you do? I said, well, if you leave me alone, I said, I'm very upset with Harry Weaver. I said, we'll be number one in the market within about 6 or 7 months. So he said, what makes you think that? He said, we've been doing a lot of stuff. Anyway, I gave him a couple of names, a guy named Don Burden, who ran the Star stations at that time, and Dick Wheeler, who was the guy I worked for in Denver just before I came there. And I said, you call him and ask him. So he did, and he hired me. And then I put Walton and Doug Randall on, and the three of us did the station. And back in those days, there was a Hooper and a Pulse. You remember those days?
Oh, yeah, before Arbitron.
Well, we did all kind of junk. Would answer your phone, don't say hello, say I listen to the mighty TMA. Every kind of gimmick there was, I did it right away because I was so upset with Harry Weaver. So about 30 days after we were gone, the Hooper came in. I'd been out partying, and I got off the air, and Chuck Smith yelled upstairs. The control room was upstairs in the Dock Street Theater building. Coming out of my office right away, and I said, I got some stuff to do. I'll be down in a while. I don't feel good or something. Anyway, so his office was way in the back of the building. I went back into the office, and he said, take down your pants. And I said, what? I said, Chuck, I don't feel good. Leave me alone. I'll see you in a while. He said, no, look at this. And he threw the Hooper across the desk at me, and we had made number one in 30 days.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what, if you go back in those days, you can. It was quite a deal for him.
So why did he want to take your pants down?
He wanted to kiss my butt. That's not exactly the word.
I understand.
So that's how we started that. Just three of us ran the station for about 6-7 months, I think. Bill Taylor came in. Bobby D, a guy from the Ape that everybody knew. There weren't many jocks when I was there. We kept the same guys pretty much. We did a lot of gimmicks. We had that Indian. We buried him with a bunch of snakes up in North Charleston in a shopping center. They called him Wachikanoka. That worked very big. People would come and pay a quarter and look down at this guy. We buried him in a coffin and put about 50 rattlesnakes and boas and I don't know what all. Anyhow, it was a big gimmick. Drew a lot of people.
So he got out okay, huh?
He did it all over the country. It was a big gimmick, yeah.
I guess when you went to the top 40 format, Charleston had not had a top 40 station before.
Not as such. No, the closest thing probably would have been Jack Gale. Jack is, without exception, the best morning man that's ever been in radio. Remember J.L. Goldberg Furniture Company?
Oh, yeah, Sonny Goldberg.
Sonny Goldberg. Well, Jack Gale had made Sonny Goldberg favorites. You know the news guy Paul Harvey?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sonny Goldberg was like Paul Harvey. Jack Gale made him a star. So his ego, like Harvey, made him go on TV. Well, Sonny Goldberg didn't look like Sonny Goldberg sounded. Like Paul Harvey doesn't look like Paul Harvey, you know. I always thought one of the big mistakes you could do with a radio guy was put him where people could see him, because everybody paints a different picture of the guy on the radio than what he really is. And once you saw Sonny, oh my God, all the illusions were gone up in smoke, right? So Sonny talked to me about doing a thing. Well, I stayed awake, did a marathon, stayed awake in his window. I think we were there 3 or 4 days. It was a long time to be awake, I can tell you that. That worked pretty good.
Do you remember how you programmed the radio station then, what your philosophy was?
Oh, yeah. We had a pretty strict list of music. I did most of the music for the guys, formatted the music, most of it. We probably had a list of maybe 60, 70 records, and then we had what we called extras. See, like in Charleston, I played quite a bit of black music. Nobody had ever done that before that I was aware of. I don't think so. And I played some country stuff because in Charleston, you know, you got some black people and you got some country people. And the music mix was a little different for what had been in Charleston. And at that time, we paid a lot of attention to North Charleston, to the Navy base and that kind of stuff. I don't know how to describe the music because it wasn't typical top 40 as most people would understand top 40. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It was tailored for the city. That's the way radio stations used
exactly.
to be.
That's what it was. I remember we played Cookie and the Cupcakes. Remember that record at all or not?
No.
Anyway, it's called Matilda. It was the worst damn record you ever heard in your life. And it made number one in about 3 weeks. People loved it.
Hmm.
You know? I played it for a couple of friends and went on the phone. I said, here, I got a record. You better jump on it. What are you, crazy? Play that crap, you know? And it just, boom, number one. It was wonderful. But anyhow, it was a lot of stuff like that that were black crossovers, country crossovers. I don't know. It was just a reflection of the people, I thought, you know. But it wasn't a typical 30 list over and over, you know, like they do. But I never had a station like that anyway.
What were WTMA's technical facilities like then? Did you have the reverb on the radio station then?
No, I didn't believe in I never had that anywhere. The only thing I ever did, and I did it at every station, I wanted the radio station to appeal to women. The stations, all my stations always were hardcore kids at nighttime, and the parents watched TV, and the kids listened to the radio. So we focused the station directly at kids at nighttime. And during the day, I always had an older guy in the middays and when the housewives were there, because they, as you probably know, all jocks like to talk on the phone to the people, and I wanted somebody old who could relate with the housewives, not a young guy on. And a lot of stations that played rock and roll had young people screaming and yelling, and I wanted somebody that was older that could relate to the people easier, you know. And the housewives were a predominant thing for us. What I did with TMA and all of them was tune the transmitter. You know, women don't like highs. It's ear-piercing. So I would always have the engineer clip the highs and add some bottom to it. But I did that at every station I ever went to.
So do you look back fondly on your time in Charleston at WTMA?
If not the highlight, one of them for sure. Yeah, I love Charleston. I love TMA. I love Chuck Smith. He was a great guy to work for. He left you alone, you know. And we had a lot of fun. Had a lot of success there.
Well, George, thank you for coming to Charleston, and on behalf of all the people from WTMA now who are still feeling part of the legacy that you started when you made the station a top 40 radio station back around 1960 or so, and we do appreciate your hard work.
Nice to talk to you, John.
Coming up next on the history of TMA, we'll move ahead to 1963 and talk with one of the mighty TMA good guys, Jim Diamond.
More of the history of TMA with John Quincy is coming up right here on 1250 WTMA.
WTMA, Tiger Radio.
Now, here's more of the history of TMA with John Quincy.
We continue now with our look back at the rich heritage of WTMA. This hour, we're talking to some of the folks who made TMA mighty in the 1960s, including Jim Diamond.
22 minutes away from the hour of 9, 48 degrees right now at Street Level. We're taking dedications and requests right now. And I repeat, the number to call, the only number to call, is RA229611. Want to send the next record out for Mike and Blondie, for Russell, Mary, and all the rocks is in my head. There we go. For David and Francis, Jeanette, and also for Bob, Sam, Cynthia, everybody at Bishop England High School, for Michelle, Kathy, and question mark, for Yes Sir, Susan, and Richard. This is the brand new one from Connie Stevens, and Now That You've Gone. I just sing all night long or something like that.
When exactly were you at WTMA, Jim?
I basically started in 63. I was in high school, and the librarian at the school called and said, we understand you have a record player. We're going to have a DJ from WTMA come in for a record hop. And we're wondering, could you bring the record player in so he could use the record player? Well, here I am, you know, 18, 19-year-old kid, and I'm thinking about this adult going to use my record player.
Wow.
Wow, I can't, I don't know if I should trust him. Does he know what he's doing, you know? It's a guy from radio station using millions of dollars worth of equipment. I'm worrying about my $39.95 record player. Anyway, so she says, well, you'll have to come in and talk with him. So I bring it into the gymnasium over at James Island High School. And I set it up, and I expect some 6'6" guy to walk in, you know. And his name was Bob Mitchell. Well, in walks this 5'2" guy with 6,000 pounds of records, you know, 45 RPMs.
Hi there, I'm Bob Mitchell at WTMA, and I'm going to be here.
Hi. And so I said, well, I've got the record player set up, but I would really appreciate if you let me use it. Well, of course, in retrospect, you think about it, it's like he's thinking, well, sure, he can, doesn't matter. I'm making the money, let him do this, and if he does a good job, fine. If he doesn't, I'll just sort of, you know, tell him to go get some cookies or whatever. And so I'm learning how to slip cue in front of him and fade the music up when he's talking and bring it up when he finishes, and, you know, we make a good connection there, working back and forth. And so finally he says, how would you like to come by the station? Well, back in 63, TMA was located at the Dock Street Theater building up on Church Street, 133 Church Street. And I said, you want me to come down to the station? I said, yeah. When? Oh, how about Saturday? Okay. And it was rainy. I remember that day. And I got down there, and most of the parking meters that are down there, I think I used one of them. And so I go, and I get in there, and I go up, ring the doorbell, and they were up on the second floor. And he sticks his head out the door. Yeah, what's your... Oh, it's me. Okay. And so I basically wait for him to come downstairs and follow him up through the inside bowels of WTMA back then. And we come up, and I'm looking at the studio, and I'm just owl stricken. I mean, it's just, oh, man, I just don't know. Here I am in heaven. I could die now. I'll be happy, you know. And he says, would you like to go in the production room and play around? Okay, you know. And he does his shift, and he said, would you like to come back tomorrow night at midnight and play around with the equipment? Because back then, TMA went off the air at midnight. And I said, yeah, sure. You know? So I come back the next day, and I'm playing with the stuff. And he said, you want to come back again next week and, you know, learn how to work this stuff real good? In the meantime, the cogs in my head, they haven't turned yet. The light hasn't turned on above my head. He's looking for a weekend jock to work. And so basically, after two or three playing arounds from midnight until 12:30 or so, he says, how would you like to go to work next week? Okay. You're having this dropped in your lap, you know. Back then, the only thing that a guy who was on there needed was called a restricted radio license. And it was just a little card. And you had that. And I still have the card. And it's dated April of 1963. So I look back. I say, January, February, March. So evidently, I must have started to work right around March or so, because it took time for the FCC to put everything together for you. I guess the first 3 months of radio were all part-time, Saturdays and Sundays, because I was still going to high school. And, like, nobody knew that I was Jim Diamond. That was a name that was on a cartridge when I came to work. I said, whose promo do I use? Who am I sitting in for? Well, I got you one for your own. And I said, really? Who? Jim Diamond. I went, oh, okay. You know, I'm 18, 19-year-old kid. I don't care. John Smith. That's a good name. So as time went by, and I got out of high school, and I'm working full-time, I worked with a guy named Doug Randall. And Doug was one of the main guys who did a remote from an area downtown Charleston. It was called the Patio Drive-In Restaurant. Mm-hmm. And it was located right between Calhoun and Spring Street, I believe, near the Ashley River Bridge. And it was a big booth about 6 or 7 feet by 6 or 7 feet by 6 or 7 feet with plexiglass around it. And the steps going up into it, and you had a table and a microphone and whatever that you would need up there to basically just talk on the air. And then that sound from the microphone would go down a telephone line to the station, who in turn would put it on, and somebody there would play all the music and the commercials. And so he said, how would you like to do the patio this weekend? I go, excuse me? No light on my head. He said, well, the patio drive-in restaurant. And I went, oh, yeah, okay. He said, I pay $25.
Wow.
$25 back then, man, you could make a down payment on a house with that almost. And I said, okay. Well, he explained to me what was needed and everything. So I said, what time do I need to get down there? He said, well, you have to be on the air by 6. And I said, okay. So I got down there about 4, you know, a little ahead of time. And I set everything up and music's playing. And I put the mic next to the radio and I say, okay, if you can hear this, turn the record off for a second. The record's playing Fats Domino or something. And bloop, sound goes off, goes back on. He can hear me. Good. Okay. We're all set. Finally, 6 o'clock rolls around. In the meantime, I'm running up and down the steps, getting information from all the ladies running around, getting orders. Okay, what are we pushing today? The French fries, the hot dogs, the hamburgers, the whatever. And so I get all this information, and I'm sitting there. And I'm talking on the air and telling everybody, come on down to the patio drive-in theater. Yeah, 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 yeah. And the music's playing, and I'm, oh, man, I am just, my hormones are pumping. I'm on top of the world, you know. And I'm sitting back in this little metal chair, and the floor was kind of wet. And I'm leaning back and listening to Just One Look by Doris Troy. Just One Look. Oh, yeah. Beautiful song. And all of a sudden, I get a little bit too far back. Wham! My feet go flying up. I hit the table. The table goes up in the air. The amplifier goes up in the air. The radio goes up in the air. The mic goes up in the air. Everything goes up in the air, but me. I go down on the floor. Eventually, everything comes down, and I'm laying there. I look up at the ceiling, and I see some holes through the ceiling, and I go, like, well, that's where all the water on the floor came from. And all of a sudden, I feel this pain in my back, and I say something really loud. Something like son of a gun, but we won't use the real word. And I'm just laying there. I say, go, son of a gun. And I'm laying there. And all of a sudden, I got to get together. So I take the table and I bring it up. And I put the amplifier, the mic, everything back together again, the chair. And I take, and I hear the radio, but I just hear shh, just that. And I go, I'll retune the radio later. And I pick the mic up and I put it next to the radio. And all of a sudden, I hear, well, that's feedback. I'm going, the mic's on. I'm on the air. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. What do I do now? Okay, we're going to dedicate that next song to a couple of guys I saw downstairs. When I first saw them, I just yelled at their names. I was so taken. I hadn't seen them for a long time. So we're going to dedicate this next song out to you two guys, Sonny and Mitch. You two guys are down there. This is for you, Sonny and Mitch. It's Les Legare, and it's my party. Well, the record started, and I slowly put the microphone down. I'm looking around. I'm going like, I wonder if they bought it. The record plays. Nobody's coming up. So the record ends, and I do the same thing to instill into everybody that was Sonny and Mitch that I said on the air. Nothing else. Sonny and Mitch. Because I was expecting, you know, police cars to come flying in, you know, red lights flashing. They didn't have blue lights back then. They were red lights. Because back then, if you said what I said on the air, that was like, you know, a capital crime, of offense, whatever. But it never happened. Nobody called. Nobody said anything. They thought I said Sonny and Mitch, and that was my final time I ever did a remote. At the patio drive-in theater, and that was fun, John.
Really. So you did weekends for a while, and then I guess gradually you moved to full-time?
Right. The last 3 months of high school. Basically, there was only like a couple of guys that I went to high school with who knew that I did this. And every once in a while, I hear somebody, did you hear about this new weekend guy? Yeah, nobody knows who he is, blah, blah, blah. I felt like James Bond walking around in the hallway. And it wasn't until after I got out of high school where they found out, oh, you were the guy that was on TMA. Yeah. Well, the mystery was gone. It was like, oh, well, that's nice. Say, where are we going to have lunch today? You know, sort of like that. It was like once they found out who the person was, it was no big deal. And then probably the end of 63, 64, another DJ came in. His name was Charlie Lindsay. And the first time I met Charlie was a very, very curious way of meeting him. I had been out with a friend of mine, and we were coming back, and I didn't have a car. He had a car. He said one of the jocks named Danny Knox is showing this new guy, I think his name was Charlie Lindsay, showing him the studio. And, of course, it's after midnight. And so he said, why don't you go up there and, you know, really put this guy on. And so I go up the steps and I'm walking in here and I hear them playing the Fred Flintstone Yabba Dabba Doo. That's what I use during my program during certain songs. I'd hit that and hit it here and play it there, whatever. And he's playing it off and showing Charlie how to run all the controls and the music and whatever. Well, in the meantime, I did not know that Charlie's pregnant wife was in a chair behind the door, which was halfway open or closed. And Charlie's around the other side with, in front of the control board with this guy, Danny Knox. And so I say, well, I'm going to put this guy on. So I come up and without really telling you what I said at that particular time, I said, nobody messes with my Yabba Dabba Doo. We'll use another word instead of messes. Well, at that time, like I said, I didn't know that his wife, Pauline, was there Well, needless to say, Charlie had no idea who the heck I was and who this drunk was. Well, I wasn't drunk. I was acting. Eventually, as I found out later on, she was there, and I apologized. She thought it was funny. I ended up actually babysitting quite a lot, their first kid, Jill, for quite a few years.
So what shifts did you work when you were a regular WTMA disc jockey?
I'm trying to remember. I believe I worked most of the time. I did the night shift, 6 to midnight. There were certain times where we would have battle of certain records. We had dedications. And the very first time I worked with a guy named Terry Allen, he answered the phone. In fact, the name that they gave him was Paul Playboy. Where they got these names from, I don't know. I have no idea.
So you were on WTMA FM as well.
Well, WTMA AM and FM were simulcast.
Mm-hmm.
Every hour on the hour, the ID was WTMA, WTMA FM, Charleston. That was the ID. So they were simulcast, but it wasn't stereo because we didn't have stereo equipment. It was an equalized telephone line that was from the Dock Street Theater down to where the transmitter was.
This is WTMA with FM, Charleston, South Carolina.
Tiger Town weather, cloudy and continued cool with a chance of light rain tonight and tomorrow. Northeasterly winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. And currently at street level, we have 47.47 WTMA street level degrees. This is Jim Diamond, Tiger Town time at the tone exactly 9 p.m.
We'll have more with Jim Diamond coming up next as the history of TMA rolls on.
For more about WTMA's past, surf to WTMAmemories.com for recordings, interviews, pictures, and more. That's WTMAmemories.com. More of the special program, The History of TMA, next on 1250 WTMA.
WTMA, Tiger Radio, Mighty TMA.
Play the RC Cola Call Your Shot game is Julius Hayward of 12 Rattlers Court in Charleston. You're ready to play the game now, Julius?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Now, which rifle do you think is going to hit the money jar?
Six.
Number six. Let's find out.
We have six rifles aimed at the money jar. If you can guess which rifle will hit the money jar, you may win the cash.
Ready? Fire. One, two, three, four, five.
Number five, hit the money jar.
Oh, Julius, you called for number six. It came at number five, but I tell you what, nobody loses on the Tiger. Give a listen to this.
All players on RC Cola's Call Your Shot receive a free six-bottle carton of RC Cola. Remember, you'll flip at the zip in RC Cola.
22 minutes and 40 seconds on the right side of 947 degrees right now at street level. The number to call to send in your Tiger Radio dedication or request is Raymond 22961. Want to send the next record out for Jerry and also for Mimi and Gidge and Sandra, for Mike and Dottie and Doug and Bubbles and Karen, Rick and Boogie and Dale and Jerry and Mike and Kathy. Gidge once more for Doug, Debbie and Donna Wayne and all the Tiger men of action.
The History of TMA.
Once again, John Quincy.
This hour, we're concentrating on the 1960s, talking to folks who helped make TMA mighty in that decade. Now, back to our interview with 1960s TMA DJ, Jim Diamond.
There were some really strange names of some people down there. Johnny Prince. When he was on the air, it was called Johnny Prince and the Prince Line. Johnny Prince. He was really good. One of my favorite jocks was a guy named Bobby D. He was called Bobby D. the Weird Beard, and I think at that time when I was right around 19, he must have been close to somewhere around between 30 and 35. We back then, at least I back then, would look at, this is an old man. Well, he had a beard. He sort of looked like Mitch Miller, the sing-along guy, sort of like him, but he had rock-hard arms, and he was really good on the air. But he was really fast and staccato. Back then, the voices that were needed, as far as the radio announcers are concerned, wasn't really that important. It was a matter of uniformity. Everybody had to play the jingles in a certain order between music and between commercials and the little things that we would say which were on cards and things like that.
Just to keep things consistent.
Right, that consistency. Even though we had some people with high, squeaky voices, probably like mine when I first started, I was probably sound like a young Jerry Lewis when I first started. The consistency of what they did was about the same, and the music was a mixture of the sporty top 40 was the music back then. Tiger Radio, TMA. What does TMA stand for? Tiger Men of Action. They came up with all kinds of little pseudonyms and anomalies as far as what it meant and things of that nature. But it was basically there for the amusement of the audience and to present a product that would get a good response, so they would get good ratings, so that it would be a good part of the community. I had a lot of fun at TMA because the atmosphere was different. I think TMA at that time was just starting to go off into the 45s and just starting a little rock. Because when I came on, they were actually playing Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, things like that. And then the British started coming in around 64 and 65 with the Beatles and the Searchers and other songs. And then all that sort of mixed together.
Were the Beatles and the British Invasion as big a thing in Charleston back in the mid-60s as they were in other parts of the country?
Yes, yes. In fact, at that time, I had my hair much longer, but it wasn't as long as the Beatles were. They had the movie Hard Day's Night. They showed it at the Gloria Theater downtown. The program director back then, he said, I wanted to stick Diamond in front of the theater holding a guitar with a thing on it saying, WTMA presents the Beatles or something. We actually got a recording from some station in Florida of some interviews with George Harrison. And so I said, you know, we could take these and re-equalize them, and then I could record my voice over the telephone so that we could actually have people send in questions and see if we can find some questions that they ask that George Harrison answered. And so I would ask the question that so-and-so wanted to know. We make it a feature. And so we actually did that for a while, and it kind of went over kind of nice.
WTMA, Tiger Radio, where you're hearing things. The music swings on WTMA, mighty TMA. You betcha.
How long together were you at TMA?
Well, let's see. I was there probably a little over 2 years during the period when they had just started bringing in rock up to 65. And there was a gentleman at that time named John Trenton, who was the program director. Basically, I wanted to get some more technical information about electronics so that I could take a piece of equipment, I guess basically built to do one or two items, and I was figuring out some way to squeeze five or six items out of it so that I could get more use of equipment as far as audio and mics and amplifiers and things of that nature. So I went to a school in Charleston, but it was like I didn't have a lot of money back then, and so my folks said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll pay for that if you promise not to work full time. If you'll study on this. And I went, okay, sure. And so I worked basically for the last 6 to 8 months of 65, and John Trenton was back then, and there was a time when they had to have a meeting, and he basically called me up and said, need you to come in to sit in while we're having a meeting of all the DJs and everybody downstairs. And I said, I can't do it, John. I made a deal with my folks. And apparently I misunderstood John when he said something to the nature like, well, if you can't come in, we'll get somebody else. Well, at that time, I was 21 then. And to a 21-year-old kid, that attitude basically said to me, well, then you're fired. And so I figured, well, I guess I'm fired. And because I was kind of hurt and whatever. And it wasn't until years later in 1999, reunion at the hotel, that I found out from some other guys that nobody understood why I left. It was like all in my head. So it was like one big mistake. And I'm like, oh, no, if I'd have stayed there, I would have really enjoyed working with a lot of the people who were starting to come in, who had been there, and other people down the line.
Did you work with Boobie Nash then?
Yes, I did. I worked with Boob. We had a good relationship as far as production. Boob loved to do many people productions. Sometimes at TMA, I'd see as many as four people in the studio, which is kind of hard when you got one microphone to use, and it's like somebody's talking, and somebody else is starting to come up, and then they take over the copy, and the first person who was talking backs out, and the third person comes in, and you're seeing all these people coming in doing a spot all at one time. Because back then, there was no such thing as digital. It was all reel-to-reel, and so you tried to keep the quality as best as you could.
And they didn't have multi-track either, multiple tracks on analog tape.
No. They had two machines. One was an Ampex, which would run at either 7 or 15 upright, and then they had a smaller one, which was called an Ampex 601. They were all full track, but it only ran at 7.5. It had a record switch, and invariably, if you didn't know not to put your finger on that record switch right next to the play, you put a jingle master on there, and you erased it. And that happened, not to me. Oh, I'm very thankful it never happened to me, but I saw someone play it, and all of a sudden we looked down. I go like, you're erasing it, John. Not John Trenton, another John. The engineer at that time was a gentleman named Harold Kramer, and he took the machine apart and did the spring where you really have to push down the record button to get it to work like that. It was a lot of trial and error, so that the sound that TMA had, the jingles, the energy that jocks were supposed to put out at that particular time, it was very high, it was very energy, it was very happy, that was good, here's something even better. When you finish playing your second record, that was great, but here's something even, it was building, but I guess it was a circle of entertainment, of energy and whatever, that at that particular time was very popular.
You're hearing things. News on WTMA Tiger Radio.
2 minutes and 30 seconds on the right side of 947 degrees right now. With street level, Raymond 22961 is the number to call to send in your dedication and request. Want to send the next record out for Barbara, Brian, and Stan, Larry, Lonnie, Kathy, Mary, Ronley Lane, and also for Speedy, Gerald, and Jackie, and Irene, and also for Lenny, Diane, and Linda, Jeff, Cynthia, Tom, and George. These are the impressions, and people, get ready. Here they come. From Audio 12500, those are the impressions on Tiger Radio. It's called People Get Ready. 6 minutes on the right side of 947 degrees right now under mostly cloudy Charleston skies. And the number to call, I repeat, the only number to call to send in your Tiger Radio dedication or request is Raymond 22961. That's RA22961. Paul Aloysius Playboy standing by taking him down. Want to send the next record out for Brad and Cindy, Kathy, Henry, Joe, Pam, Brenda, Jerry, and Gerald, Joe, George, and Jess. There we go. For Linda, Margaret, for Larry, Jim, and Paul, Rox, Yathur, Debbie, John, and Joe. What do you say we go and do the Freddy? This is Freddy and the Dreamers, and I'm telling you now, yeah! Hey, Freddy and the Dreamers on Tiger Radio, the mighty 12500, and I'm telling you now, well, what do you say one more time? Woo! Yeah! Hey! Woo!
I'm telling you now.
Hey, I like that! Freddy and the Dreamers on Audio 12500, and I'm telling you now, 10 minutes past the hour of 9, 47 degrees right now at Street Devil. Our number right now to send your Tiger Radio dedication and request is Raymond 22961. Paul Aloysius Playboy standing by. Oh, he's sitting down. Okay, taking down the dedications and requests. Want to send the next record out for Tom, Mike, and Vicky, Lenny, and Rosie, for Ed Carroll, Roger, Joseph, Frank, John, Carol, Barbara, everybody, Bishop England High, and also for Pappy.
WTMA 1250.
Next up on the history of TMA, we'll talk to a man who's woken up Charlestonians on country radio for decades. But before he played Merle Haggard and Dolly Parton, he was a top 40 DJ on the mighty TMA. A conversation with Charlie Bird Lindsay is next.
You're listening to a special WTMA presentation, The History of TMA. Now, here's more of the history of TMA with John Quincy.
This hour on the history of TMA, we're looking back at the 1960s. For years, Charlie Bird Lindsay has been waking up the low country on stations with names like Weasel and Bubba and Cat Country. But his first radio job in Charleston was as a top 40 DJ. Right here on WTMA.
Super hit number 10 from Gene Simmons and the Sporty Top 40 Survey on Tiger Radio 1, TMA, The Haunted House. Hey now, the high-low game begins tomorrow on the mighty TMA Radio 1 in Charleston.
Humba!
Yeah. Let's go right around to Tiger Radio Action Central News. First and fast at half past with Pete Fountain. A little bit of humbug.
All right, we're talking to Charlie Bird Lindsay, who worked for WTMA Radio back in the, was it mid-60s? When were you there, Charlie?
1963, fall of 63, about the fall of 1965. At the time, WTMA was one of the premier rock and roll stations in the Southeast. I would come to Charleston, hear WTMA. Oh, boy, what I'd give to work at that radio station. And just sort of visualized working there. People used to tell me that, Charlie, you talk like you already work there. It was a station I always wanted to work for. I was living in Greenville, working at WQOK, which was the premier rock and roll station in Greenville. Got a call from a record rep who knew my love for TMA and said, hey, they've got an opening for an afternoon jock at TMA. Why don't you call? And I thought he was kidding me. I said, well, why don't you just have them call me? Doug Clements, who was on the air, known as Doug Randall, called me that evening. I sent down an air check. Never met him in person, never had a contract, wanted to work at TMA so bad. I just, on the phone, turned in 2 weeks' notice and came to work in the fall of 1965.
Was that a good decision, you think?
Yeah, I think it was. I love TMA. I love the music they played. At one time, we had like 75% of the audience at night, 50 or 60 in the afternoons. I did 3 until 6 every day. And the odd thing about it, how radio's changed, we had the Sporty Top 40 show. Every afternoon, Monday through Friday, we started with song number 40 and counted down to number 1.
at 6 o'clock. And they were the same songs every day. The only thing that changed on the daily program, we had extras we could play. The up-and-comers, what we called the Red Ball Special of the Week. And we had two gold records, oldies, that we played an hour. That's the only thing that would change Monday through Friday. I accepted the job just to do afternoons. When I came down here, they appointed me as production director. I was charged of all the production of commercials on the radio station. So I did that for about 6 months. And then we got a new manager, and he came in and said, well, I'm moving Doug Clements, or Doug Randall, who was the morning mayor, by the way, of Charleston, Deputy Doug Randall, the morning mayor, did morning 6 until 9. They asked me if I would be the program director since Doug Randall was going to be the station manager. So I went in about a 6 month period from afternoon guy to production director to program director and stayed in that position through the fall of 1965.
Who are some of the other people you work with when you were at TMA?
At 9 o'clock, we had a fellow who was in the Air Force, Bob Scott. I think his real name was Robert Hogan. But Bob Scott went like from 9 to noon. Then we had a fellow whose real name is R.J. Kite. And on the air, he was known as Jim Diamond from 12 to 2, I believe. And I think I did 2 until 6 on that Sporty Top 40 show instead of 3 to 6. And then Diamond came back 6 to 8. And then we had Danny Knox until midnight.
How about news people? Did you have a separate news department at the time, or did you guys just read your own news?
We had no news department. We had the usual AP teletype machine, and at 30 minutes past the hour, we had mutual news, you know, network news. And at the top of the hour, we had news headlines, mainly just South Carolina headlines. That's all we had for news.
What set WTMA apart from other stations in the Southeast during that time period, musically or on the air promotionally?
I think that was back when we had regional radio stations. We had a large African-American population here. We would always be a station that broke R&B records here. You could hear songs in Charleston you would hear nowhere else in the country initially.
Did WTMA have any competition during the time you were there?
Yes. As a matter of fact, people who've been in Charleston for some time might remember Harry Weaver, who was a dear friend of mine that owned WOKE. I think Harry Weaver and WOKE was probably the first rock and roll station, if you can believe that, in town. He had Doug Clements, who eventually became the PD at WTMA, George Wilson, who ended up being a program consultant for Bartell Broadcasting, was over there at WOKE. They talked Chuck Smith into changing TMA from a good music station to a rock and roll station. They didn't tell the staff. So Doug Clements, Doug Randall, and George Wilson, after midnight, would go over to WTMA studios after everybody left and cut promos and everything and got it ready. They went in like on a Monday morning, had everything switched over on the cart machines, and when the staff came in at 6, they said, we're no longer a good music station. We're a rock and roll station. And boy, did that cause some grief.
What's WTMA mean to you?
The radio station meant to me, that was a very exciting time in my life. I had visualized, I always wanted to work at TMA. It was, to me, a source of accomplishment. And I felt like I was the king of the hill when I turned on that microphone every afternoon at 2 o'clock and said, Charlie Bird Lindsey here at Tiger Radio 1, the mighty TMA. I felt very emotional about the radio station. I still feel emotional about those call letters, about the people who work there, and Chuck Smith, who owned it.
What do you think WTMA means to Charleston?
When you think of Charleston, you think of WTMA. There was something about that radio station that when I would get outside of the city, even before I worked there, even if I didn't know what station was on the car radio, there was a certain magic about it. I could say, that's TMA. TMA was the voice of Charleston. When you thought of Charleston, you thought of WTMA. And when you thought of WTMA, you thought of the holy City. And I think that's one of the best compliments you can pay a radio station.
519 WTMA Happy Time from Tiger Radio 1 in Charleston. Here's number 11 from the Sporting Top 40 Survey and Gene Chandler. Just be true.
Our thanks to Charlie Bird Lindsay, as well as George Wilson and Jim Diamond, for their memories of the mighty TMA in the 60s. In our next hour, we'll continue talking to some of the TMA air personalities from the 1960s, including the one and only Booby Nash. I'm John Quincy, and if you'd like to find out more about WTMA's heritage, check out this website, WTMAmemories.com. There you'll find historic recordings, photos, interviews, and more. That's WTMAmemories.com. And keep it here on the Charleston station that continues to make history, as well as report it. 1250 WTMA.